hope you're hungry for nothing. The Raptors fall further down the lotto standings again as they beat the Philadelphia 76ers pretty cleanly. 118-105, the Raptors did their absolute best to, you know, meet the 76ers on their level. Scotty Barnes sat out with a hand and finger contusion. Emmanuel quickly rested on a non-back-to-back. RJ Barrett was out for personal reasons. Jamal Shedd got benched for the second half for playing too well, I guess. Jakob Poeltl only played 17 minutes. None of it mattered. They still beat a very bad shell of a 76ers team. It's the Raptor Show. Blake Murphy and Matt Bonner. Jason Capone will join us in the second half. Man, this is I'm really dragging down the average career three-point percentage on the show today.
Yeah. Capone, one of the greatest shooters ever.
Ever.
Yeah.
He's a couple spots ahead of you on the
He's like top five all time.
He has the sixth highest three-point percentage. Luke Kennard passed him, so that dropped him from fifth to sixth.
Luke Kennard's still playing. That could change.
Yeah. Do you know where you are on the list?
I do not.
19th.
19th.
Pretty good.
Top 20.
Pretty good.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay. So the Raptors last night. Yeah, I don't know, man. Where do you want to start? What
more can you do?
This is the thing. Like, I've had some people in my like mentions on Twitter or Blue Sky or whatever, like, oh, they suck at tanking. Like, they look at how many games they've won. They haven't tanked aggressively enough. And like, I get it. Like, they're seventh in the lottery standings now. That's not kind of quote unquote worth it for a whole season of not being competitive. But like games like last night, and really they've won five of the last six, and only one of those games they closed with their actual, you know, they're regular starters. The Jakob Poeltl sat out a couple, quickly sat out a couple, Barnes, Barrett. And even when those guys have played, they haven't closed other than the one Utah game. Yeah, like you said, what else can you do?
Our end of bench guys are better than everybody else's end of bench guys.
Yeah.
And the way the schedule worked out too. Like, yeah, we're playing all teams that are also trying to lose and get better lottery odds. It's just like a perfect storm to tank the tank.
It's also like, it's a perfect storm timing-wise as well, because we are in conference tournament season. We're about to be in March Madness. Everyone, I imagine a lot of Raptors fans, a lot of basketball fans are at least, you know, keeping some eye on college basketball these next couple weeks as well. And it's like, oh, you know, Vijay Edgecombe has an awesome game yesterday to keep Baylor moving in their conference tournament and keep their bid hopes alive because they're kind of a bubble team. Duke's set. You've probably seen Duke at this point, but three lotto picks on the same roster. If you tune into a Duke game, you know, Jeremiah
Rutgers lost.
Yeah. Rutgers has done.
Dylan Harper had like 27-8-8 in that loss.
Yeah.
How does that happen? How do you have two like top five picks? I get it. They're freshmen. I mean, we talked a little bit about it. There's, if you're 18 or 19, you're playing against like 22-year-olds.
Yeah. I also think at this point with Ace, like Dylan Harper, I really like. I think he's probably the second best prospect, at least from what I've seen so far. And Ace Bailey has all the tools in the world, and he's a huge, big guy, big shot maker. But he is not at this stage like a drive winning kind of guy. Like, he's a youngish freshman in terms of like how he plays, and you know, defensively, there's a lot of potential there, but he's not that good defensively.
It's all potential.
Yet. Yeah,
it's funny, you know. I saw a thing, they're doing that docuseries thing with Rick Pitino at St. John's, and he was talking about how like they don't even recruit high school players anymore. It's all the portal, because a 21 and a 22-year-old is going to be better than anybody coming out of high school. Even like McDonald's All-Americans in most cases, because you just develop so much between 18 and 22. If you want to win now and you're bringing new players on your team, it makes more sense to bring older players through the transfer portal.
Yeah, it's tough. And like, this is, you know, it's kind of a new, we're still adjusting, especially like if you're sitting down and you're picking your bracket, right? I know people pick randomly or whatever. You know, generally you've been pretty good of like, oh, Kentucky and Duke, they have a lot of NBA draft names that I know. Not now. Like, you want to, you know, look, some of these teams are going to turn out juniors and seniors who go to the draft or whatever. You look at Florida, they're a pretty veteran team, right? So that's probably, if you're picking your bracket and stuff like that, that's probably actually what you're looking at more. You know, the Houston team that Jamal Shedd left behind is like, you know, a more veteran team.
And like those years where like Butler was making deep runs, Creighton, schools like that, it's because they had four-year guys, like a group of like juniors and seniors that had been there and had that continuity and seasoning and developed physically, matured physically, that gave them an advantage over like a Kentucky. Who, Kentucky is going to have 6-7 NBA players on their team, but they're all 18.
Yeah.
They're all 19. And
like, a big part of Calipari, and I know Calipari's had, like he's gotten a lot of credit for the actual coaching job he's done this year, but, like, at Kentucky, it was a lot of the implication was, hey, come here and, we're a good team and we're a good program, but we are a finishing school to get you ready for the NBA. All we really care about is getting you drafted as high as possible.
Yeah, we're an accelerator program for the NBA.
Yeah, which is fine. It's just like you're not going to win the championship every year if it's, you know, a bunch of guys who are focused on their draft stock and haven't played together for 3 years the way some of these other teams have.
Which Kentucky fans do not like. You talk about a hardcore fan base. Big, what do they call it? Big Blue Nation?
Yeah.
They travel. Like you go to the SEC tournament, and when Kentucky plays, it's like a home game. And then if they lose and get eliminated, then, all right, now there's tickets for the other schools.
Even I saw someone tweeted, and apologies for not remembering who this was. Maybe it was John Hollinger. But already at the SEC tournament, like, Kentucky doesn't play until tomorrow. But yesterday at the SEC tournament games, like, Kentucky fans were, like, by numbers the highest, even though Kentucky didn't have a game on the schedule.
Even, like, though it's in Nashville, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, University of Tennessee, nope, it's all Kentucky fans. Just the way it goes. Arkansas is kind of like that too, but they're not as good this year.
I will say, I saw one photo from last week of a parent who had a kid on each team with Missouri and Kentucky. And I will just say, don't do a split jersey of those two teams because it looks really funny when you put Missouri, the first part of Missouri and the last part of Kentucky on a split jersey. The parents got to know better than that.
One more question while we're on this subject. Yeah. Like, how big of a difference is it if you have, like, going from, like, the fourth pick in this draft to, like, the seventh or eighth pick in this draft?
So, depending on, obviously, you know, I'm going to rely on some of the draft people for this, right? Like, I do, you see, when you come in some days, I've got the college stuff up on Synergy. Yep. Like, I'm trying to keep up with it as much as I can. But the people who this is their full-time job and they're locked in, there seems, obviously, Cooper Flagg is a clear number one. And then the next line below that seems to be drawn at four. Everyone agrees it's a good draft. It's probably not as elite a draft as we thought coming into this year. Some of the top prospects haven't been quite that good. But it does seem like Dylan Harper, Ace Bailey, VJ Edgecombe are 2, 3, 4 in some order. And then at least right now, there's like a little bit of a gap until you get into this wide third tier that has guys like Trey Johnson, Malawach, the 7'2" kid from Duke, the Lithuanian point guard at Illinois, and you kind of go down the list. I mentioned Jeremiah Fears earlier. He's a guy I think, you know, could rise if Oklahoma has a bit of a run in the tournament, but it's like kind of a meaty third tier. So maybe not as big a deal to drop from, say, 5 to 8, but if you really like Dylan Harper or VJ Edgecombe, and I don't know that this applies to the Raptors as much because I think they want to win next year. But if you're like a Washington or a Charlotte and you get told, oh, Ace Bailey's going to take a couple years, that's like kind of attractive. If your team's really, like Alex Saar, who we just saw a couple times with the Wizards, he's not good yet, but he is doing a lot of fun things and showing a lot of potential and helping you lose games in the interim. Like, that's not the worst thing for Washington. I think Ace Bailey could maybe be that for some of those teams next year. So
I think one of those players like that would be good for a team that's good right now. Like OKC has a zillion draft picks.
Yeah.
If they got someone who's not going to be good for 2 more years, that works out for them too. Cause they're trying to win now, but they're not going to be able to pay everybody if they do win now. And then you got the rookie scale thing for a couple years with someone who can contribute.
Yeah. This will be interesting to see too, where like as of right this second before the lottery, OKC does have extra picks, but their earliest pick is 17. But of course, Philly needs to finish bottom six. Philly needs to land top six in the draft lottery to keep their pick.
I would say that's a safe bet the way that team looks. God.
But keep in mind though, like you're at the mercy of the lottery, right? Like even right now, they're fifth in the lottery odds. There's still like a 40% chance they slide lower than six.
If their lottery fall, if their pick is in the six or lower, they keep it. Not based on where they finish?
If it's 1-6.
So even if they finish with the fourth. Okay, post-lottery. So even if they finish with the fourth worst record, but their pick falls out for some reason, they would lose their pick.
Right. So right now, they are in fifth last, but there is, I just looked it up, a 38% chance that that pick goes to Oklahoma City instead because they land 7, 8, 9.
Gotcha. Yeah, so like a player that might take a couple years would be perfect for them.
Yeah, for the time. I mean, that's, I think that was the thinking with Usman Jang, but
I was reading some rumors about Cooper Flagg, depending on who gets the first pick, possibly staying one more year at Duke.
Yeah.
What do we think about this?
I'm skeptical of this because, like, I know that there is obviously NIL money and stuff like that. However, the number one pick in this year's draft is projected to make let me punch it in here so I like get it correct.
$13 million?
$13.8 million in year one. And the first 2 years of your deal are guaranteed. So you're talking about Cooper Flagg would leave like minimum $28 million guaranteed on the table to go back one more year.
But more importantly, you would get to that Mac, super max rookie extension earlier.
Yes.
That's what it really is about.
Yes. So you'd get to that earlier. And like, yes, there's NIL money, but there's also endorsement money in the NBA on top of that.
But Cooper Flagg's from Maine.
I think it's a bluff. Listen. Like, I don't think I think once it came down to it, the chance to be the number one pick and secure all that money and get yourself on the 4-year timeline to getting a max contract and things like that, it's going to be too attractive, even if it means.
How much NIL money would he make next year if he stayed at Duke? 15, 10, 15 million?
Right. And so even then, you're matching your NBA contract.
You know how far that goes in Maine?
Yeah.
Do you have any idea?
But it's
can live like a king for 10 lives just off that one NIL year.
But you could also get that in the NBA on top of other endorsements yourself closer.
What if it's like the Wizards?
Yeah.
In a team that's probably not going to be good for a little bit here.
Here's the thing, though. You think the Wizards are going to be good next year? You think Charlotte's going to be good next year? It's probably going to be the same teams in that pot. Now, if you go back to school and then you go in the draft again,
you end up with the same team anyway.
Washington and Charlotte again, or whatever. True. And the Raptors won't be in the mix then. I don't think. It's certainly not their intention. So
yeah, that's a good point. I mean, yeah, you can't guarantee what team you're going to go to.
May 12th, everyone, draft lottery night. Look, by the way, we're going to talk about Raptors 76ers. I'll pivot here in a sec. But I do want to say, if you are a person who cares about draft prospects, who likes conference tournaments, March Madness, and things like that, over the next couple of weeks, we're going to talk about that stuff more. We're going to, starting tomorrow, actually, we'll have some of the NBA draft people on. We'll get some NCAA people on. We won't ignore the Raptors, but we will talk a little bit more about the college prospects and some of the hot college teams leading into March Madness. So that should be fun.
This is an underrated college basketball weekend when all the conference tournaments come to a head.
Dude, the game started at 11 a.m. today. Like, I know we're on air, so no one should turn it on until 12, but, like, Duke plays right when we're done. That's what I'm saying.
Like,
going on the phone,
everyone
on the
talks
treadmill
about the first 4 days of the tournament, but this weekend is just as good because there's a ton of games, and it's all going to be, like, semifinals and finals of the conference tournament, so, like, really good teams playing each other.
It's also, like, there are a number of prospects who, like, interesting draft prospects whose teams are not certain to get into the March Madness field. So Vijay Edgecombe at Baylor.
This might be your last chance to see him.
They're probably on the bubble. If they win today, I think they're probably going to be fine. They're close to the resume strong enough. Trey Johnson at Texas. They need another win today to, you know, make their case.
Texas might be out.
Yeah.
They need a run.
But you
SEC tournament.
Yeah, they beat Vanderbilt yesterday to kind of keep that alive, and like, they were an underseed against Vanderbilt. They got Texas A&M today, I think.
Yeah. They're going to have to beat Texas A&M, get a couple upsets against some of these top 25 teams in the SEC to have a chance.
Honestly, I can't believe anyone's listening to our show right now with Akron against Bowling Green on right now. Sorry, it's the only game on. But yeah, like, Duke plays at noon. Like, we got games wall to wall. And if you're tuning in, I know the SEC tournament doesn't really pick up until tomorrow, but our pal Dan Schulman on the call for all those ones. Texas A&M is at 3:30 today. So I don't know if that's one of the games that Dan is on.
I would say the SEC is so deep this year that it picks up today.
Yeah.
Normally, you're right, on a normal year.
Yeah.
Friday, I would say.
Well, we're a Florida-based show, you know. We operate around the Gators.
We got the double bye, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, let's do a couple minutes on that Raptors 76ers game last night. So, obviously, couldn't out-tank the 76ers, who also lost, in addition to all the injuries and rests and things like that, lost Lonnie Walker 20 seconds after he checked into the game. I do want to say they've been playing a lot of bad teams, obviously, and that changes the bar a little bit. But credit where it's due, I refreshed the stats. Over the last 2 months, They're up to number three in defense as a team. I know you're not playing world beaters, but credit where it's due there. Defensively, they've done a really good job. And this is the seventh game in a row that they've done awesome on the offensive glass. When you look at this time of year, is that like, is offensive rebounding kind of like the thing you're like most in control of? Like as a like, hey, effort, our guys are still locked in kind of thing?
With defense, with shot selection, no one's out there trying to get their own. Like normally, and you see it in basically every team they play, these teams aren't trying to win. They're playing kind of the end of the bench guys, two-way guys, 10-day guys, G League guys. And they're coming in with the mindset like this is an audition. This is an audition not only for the team I'm playing, but for the rest of the league to take a look at me. And I'm trying to keep my career going. So I need to get my numbers. I need to get mine. The Raptors do not have that mindset, and that's why they're winning these games, in my opinion. It's not because their end-of-the-bench guys have more talent than the other team's end-of-the-bench guys. It's because they play the right way. Mm-hmm. They play harder. They play together. They make better decisions. They talk. They do all the little things. All the culture things that we've talked about during this rebuild that are very important to set the foundation moving forward for when you're fully healthy and actually trying to win. They've executed marvelously, and unfortunately now it's backfiring because it's causing them to win all these games down the stretch.
Yeah, and it's interesting too because like you look at the eight guys who played yesterday, and like not all these guys are going to be around when the Raptors are competitive again. Like not all eight of these guys can't stick on the team. Who we don't know, you know, is this Garrett's last year? Garrett, by the way, played 22 minutes last night, which was double his previous season high. He's up to I think plus 15 on the season, so he's like. In a year where the team's lost a lot of games, he still has a strong positive plus minus. Castleton and Robinson, maybe one of those guys is here. Roden and Lawson, I don't know. They've both been really good. They combined for 53 last night. But, like, Lawson's a free agent. Roden's on a two-year two-way, so he might be around. But not all of these guys are going to be around. So it's great to see, I don't know, you look around the league at this time of year and there are a lot of guys trying to shoot their way into the next contract or a big stat line. You know, it's worth noting European teams are scouting this time of year and stuff like that for, you know, the next Lonnie Walker who went over and played half a season in Europe this year. But yeah, despite all of those kind of conflicting incentives, the Raptors seem everyone's holding onto the rope and playing with the togetherness.
Yeah, I mean, they sat nine guys. You mentioned some of these players that are getting these minutes. I was joking before the show. We got a new big three.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the numbers, they're eye popping. Orlando Robinson, your boy, just becoming a butterfly.
25, 12, and six.
Six assists.
Yeah.
I didn't know he had passing game like that. And then Roden, 20 breakout career night for him, 25 points, 12 rebounds, five assists, four steals.
Yeah.
He's had double figures every game since he's come up with the Raptors, I believe.
Yeah, I did a hit on him with you guys on the pregame before Monday's game. And like he's a guy that I liked him in camp. I liked him with the 905. It's cool to see this. And again, he's the one on a multi-year deal. Lawson's a free agent, Robinson's a free agent, Castleton's on a 10-day. Roden is the one who they're locked in for another year of him. So pretty good to see this progress right away. And you mentioned the four steals. You know, he's a guy 6'5", 6'11", wingspan, and like physically strong. You would hope that would translate defensively. So nice to see it last night.
Yeah, and seeing the outside shot fall for him was nice too. And then Lawson, you know, two games ago, he had that 32-point, 12 rebound, seven threes, and you're like, is this a fluke? And then he comes back last night.
Four more threes.
Yeah, four more threes and 28 points, six rebounds, four assists.
You remember what Darko said after Monday's game, right?
I do not.
Oh, so Lawson had 32, 12, and 0.
Oh, yeah.
And Darko was
right.
I'd love to see an assist.
Yeah.
And he got four.
He listened, yeah. They were great. 33 assists, you know, 20 turnovers, but that was mostly in the third quarter when Philly turned up the pressure. But they came back. They took the punch and came back in the fourth, settled down, got back to playing how they played in the first half and closed the game out.
Yeah, 20 turnovers, but they make up for that with 17 offensive rebounds. So the overall possession battle's pretty even. And a good shooting night for the Raptors, which a little surprising when you look and see Jameson Battle went 3 for 12. And who played? You're like, oh, it's probably a bad shooting night. But pretty much everyone else, including Orlando Robinson, hit two threes. Garrett hit two threes. Good night all around. And yeah, Jameson really understanding the assignment of like, you got the green light, bud. Like, shoot whatever you want to shoot. Yeah.
12 three attempts in one game.
Yeah. He played 38 minutes. It's, I guess maybe the mask is, the issue with him taking 12 threes though, on a night that he didn't have the shot, is he's now fallen behind you in the chase for the second best.
Yeah, that's horrible.
3-point percentage. okay.
My last claim to fame.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about two of the rotation decisions in this one. And we understand the scenario and things like that. But Jamal Shedd only played 12 minutes. He only played the first half, had 5 dimes and 5 points, was a plus 17 in his 12 minutes. Then we didn't see him in the second half. Darko said after the game, it was just, you know, wanting to see more of Roden and Lawson, even though none of those guys is kind of like a natural pure point guard. A second round draft pick rookie getting benched for the second half. Is that like maybe a little too far in terms of like Shedd could use this development time too?
Yeah. You know, Coach Pop used to have a term for these types of situations, and it was never in a tanking situation. It was more like, I don't want you to get hurt. The playoffs are coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And he called it a get a sweat game.
Ah.
So he'd go to Tony or Manu or whoever and be like, listen, I'm going to play you a couple rotations in the first half just to get a sweat, and then you're going to be done. So I wonder if that was like the plan going in, like it was a get a sweat game for Shedd.
Yeah. And Pirtle too, who only played 17
and Pirtle,
minutes.
Same
but Pirtle's
thing.
A vet. Like, I have, not that I have issue with it anyway, I was just curious your perspective on it. But yeah, like, Pirtle is a vet. If he doesn't play a ton of minutes, like, it whatever. The other question is, so they only played 8 guys. They only had 9 available. What does Chris Boucher have to do to get into one of these?
Like, tooth. Didn't he mess his tooth up?
Well, he had his wisdom teeth out.
Yeah.
And so, but that was like over a week ago now.
I mean, you know, I don't know.
I got mine out on a Friday and I had to be back in class on Monday at university. You know, I'm built different though.
Yeah, same thing. I took like a day off from practice. I was in high school.
No, so like obviously we've asked Darko about this multiple times over the year, over 2 years really, because Chris Boucher is kind of, you know, he started last year out of the rotation and then he comes in, he's awesome, comes out, comes in, and he's kind of been like, hey, when we need an extra guy, he's in. And then he always plays really well. Is this just a case of like, yes, they're playing younger guys more, but like Garrett played 22 minutes.
He's a contract year too.
Yeah, like Garrett played 22 minutes last night. It's obviously not just about an age thing. My actual guess is that Chris Boucher, even if he's not quote unquote the best player on the team, he can turn a loss into a win quickly. Like he's like such a hot streak guy.
Yeah.
That maybe they're just worried about that. I don't know. It does seem
I wonder also if there's like a back channel conversation, like, listen, we're not playing you.
Mm-hmm.
We know you're a free agent. You've been here the whole time. Like, we'll figure it out in the offseason.
Yeah. And like, Garrett kind of alluded to like, well, not to that the contract part of it, but the,
like, if I was in that situation, I would be like freaking out, like, oh my God, like, am I going to be out of the league because of this?
Yeah.
Because once you hit a certain age, especially if you're a role player guy off the bench, when you stop playing, you just like fall off people's maps and radars.
I think he'll be okay. Like, he's 32. He played, he's gotten into 50 games this year. It's like the second best numbers of his career. There was interest in him at the trade deadline. It was just hard to make the math work with an $11 million salary and some of these apron teams and stuff like that.
Well, we talked about it with Andre Miller.
Yeah.
Yesterday, when he's talking about, you know, how did you play 80-plus games all those seasons in a row? And he's like, because I didn't want to fall behind.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I'm talking about. Like, you can fall behind with this stuff. Towards the end of my career, when I was in my 30s and I was having my calf issues, it was, like, stressful getting a calf strain and having to miss 3 weeks. And feeling like, all right, like, am I falling behind, falling out? I never like that. Andre obviously didn't like that. Mm-hmm. Boucher, who's a guy who was undrafted, undrafted, kind of an underdog story. Like, if you're an underdog story, you just feel like you can't afford to have stuff like this happen. Which again reinforces like they got to be talking to him about this.
Yeah, you would think so. And again, Garrett kind of not the contract side, but alluded to the other day that Chris has been good through all this and there's good communication. I will say it is really sad when you see the overhead picture of the bench though, and it's the 8 guys playing, and then Chris is by himself at the very end because all the injured guys like get work in or whatever. And RJ I think was away from the team entirely yesterday, and then you see the bench was like 6 empty seats, and then Chris at the end because Chris has always for years been like that. He said he likes the last seat on the bench, but optically it's really funny. So there's then also the opposite of what Chris Boucher is dealing with, which is Quentin Grimes is a role player for his whole career so far, gets acquired at the deadline, is headed into restricted free agency, and like, you can't, obviously, you know, going on a championship run is good for your paycheck as well, but man, the, hey man, you have the ultimate green light, a greener light than you've ever had at any level before, right before free agency. Got to be nice to be Quentin Grimes, given how well he's playing.
Yeah, he's a bucket getter. Yeah. Like, he can go score in a lot of different ways. It's awesome for him because I don't think teams realized he could do this. So if you're a team looking to, you know, I'd see him as like your guy off the bench to come in and get buckets and like give you a punch, give you a spark, which I don't think was something teams would have considered him for before this stretch.
So, no, yeah, lower usage defense.
Exactly.
First guy.
It definitely raises his value because you can use him for either one. Mm-hmm. You can like put him in the starting lineup and he'll be a good role player. Or you can like be like, hey, we're going to move you off the bench and you're going to spearhead the second unit offensively. Yeah. Give us that spark.
It's great. It's only been 15 games, but his 15 games with Philly would represent career high usage, career high efficiency, career high points per game. Everything like that. And then obviously he has the reputation from his New York and Dallas time as a pretty solid defender as well. We'll talk a little bit more about some of the themes of this game tomorrow because the Raptors are going to play the Jazz, who just got fined for over tanking, $100K for over resting Lauri Markkanen. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about some NBA stuff. A lot of fun games in the NBA last night. But right now, we got to take a break. On the other side, we'll talk to Jason Capono, the only guest of the show who is arguably a better three-point shooter than you.
Well, he is. The numbers don't lie.
You guys are close, though.
No, not that close. I mean, he's like 3% better than me. Yeah. That's a lot.
Yeah,
that's,
I guess, big, once you look at 9 years or 12 years,
yeah,
or something.
That's not like one-off season. That's a big sample size for both of us. Yeah. Yeah.
It's good. There's a lot of shooting in this next segment.
There sure is.
I'm Blake. Just rebound and pass the rock. Don't just get out of the way. Okay, let's take a break. Let's talk to Jason Capono on the other side as the Raptors show continues with Blake Murphy and Matt Bonner.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, welcome back to the Raptor Show. Blake Murphy and Matt Bonner with you. Combined career three-point percentage of like 43%, right? Because I have zero attempts to drag your percentage down.
Well, Capono's bringing it up.
Yes.
I'm lower.
Yeah, slightly though. You keep being self-deprecating about it, but he's at, 43.4% and you're 42 point something. It's pretty good. What is it? 43.4 and 41.5. You were at, so
that's higher. I didn't know I was that high.
Yeah, so only 2 percentage points, not 3 percentage points. You're too modest, Matt. Let's see what Jason Capono thinks about your shooting. He joins us now, 9-year NBA vet, 2-year Raptor, and yes, 6th all time in 3-point percentage. Jason, how you doing?
What's up? How we doing, Matt? How we doing, Blake?
Hey, Jason, how you been?
Man, I'm doing good. It was good to be back in Toronto last weekend.
What have you been up to since retirement?
I've been getting fatter. About 4 months ago, I was up 25 pounds, and then my I have twin daughters and twin boys. So before we went on our Christmas break trip, the girls told me that I needed to lose some weight, you know, because they couldn't have me with my shirt off at the pool with all the side and back fat popping out. So
I thought dad bods were in.
Yeah, dad bods are in for all the moms, but you know, when your daughter sees you, you know, poolside, and she sees the stuff that hangs out the side in the back, and they're not too pumped to say, hey, dad, you know, come take me to lunch or come swimming. They're like, no, put your shirt back on.
So in seriousness, how did you do it? Like, did you find it came back pretty quickly? Like once you got back to the routine of it and all?
No, it takes a lot. So, you know, I'm 44 years old. So as soon as you turn 40, things go downhill real quick. So it takes a lot of, it's very hard to stick to a 1500 calorie diet when you used to probably eat, like, say, 4,500 calories. So it's not a very fun life, but I do look better, and I do fit in the same clothes that I did wear when I was back playing. So I guess, you know, that's the benefit of it.
That's huge. That's huge. Hey, Jason, one thing I'm curious to ask you about. At the end of your career, can you explain, describe, like, how retirement from basketball came to be? Like, what kind of happened at the end of your career that forced you out of the game?
I mean, I just stopped playing, right? So if you don't have any, you know, any product on tape, you know, I think my last year was the lockout year, right? In which you were still playing.
Yep.
So, you know, we had, what, 7 months off? Or if you didn't make the playoffs, you were done in, you know, early April. And then I think we got back to it right around Christmas time. So I was a free agent that time, coming off a year that I didn't really play. And, you know, if you don't play well and you don't play, then it's hard to go, you know, try to go get a job.
So you did, though, at one point. You came out of retirement to do camp with the Warriors, right? Just to, like, give it another shot?
2 years later, yeah.
Okay. What was that experience like, the trying, you know, after? I know you went to Greece for a little bit, too, but you had, like, a full year off before you tried to break camp with the Warriors. What was that like, kind of going back and trying that again?
It was extremely tough, but I was, like, still 30. Let's see, I was probably, like, 34, so it was easier to lose weight and to get back in shape. It was a lot of fun. I got cut on the last day. It was kind of cool because I got cut with my twin daughters in my hands, and they were so pumped because, like, they didn't really know, because they were only, you know, like 2 years old, so they thought that the GM was telling me that he looked forward to seeing me tomorrow. But he was actually telling me, like, hey, you don't need to come in tomorrow because you're no longer on the team. So it was, it was pretty fun.
At 6'8", I didn't.
Six seven.
6'7", 6'8", like
6'6", 3/4.
Yeah, exactly. Like I would have no shot guarding the three, like no shot. I was lucky I was able to play the four. With the kind of the power forward when we played, that body type of player doesn't exist anymore. Do you think you could have, if it was now, you could have transitioned and played four and extended your career?
Well, just to kind of correct you, Matt, like, you never played defense and I never played defense.
That's for sure.
And we played team defense, which was kind of, you know, try to keep your body in front, take a charge. You know, if you dive on the floor, it was good. And also, if you kind of watch the game now, no one plays defense. Even the guys who are, like, extremely long and athletic and quick. I haven't seen a team really play defense probably since you guys, you know, were playing. So, you know, the Spurs and the Pistons back in the day and the Heat. And the game has changed. So, yeah, like the post up, you know, like the bigger kind of, you know, non-put it on the floor fours and fives, you know, like those guys are out of the game.
Right.
So you don't really have a back-to-the-basket guy. Like you have more like 6'6", tweeners, 3, 4, 5s, who, you know, and then all teams switch now. So, it's a different game, but I think it would be more fun to play in this era, knowing that you could give a guy 30 points and coaches really aren't that mad. And then if a team scores 125, it's not that big of a deal either.
I just think, like, someone with your size shooting 43%+ every season from three, like, you play forever.
Well, the other thing is, like, if either of you guys came along now, Matt, you and I have talked about this before. Jason, yeah. I think we talked about this when you came on the show last year. The three-point volume each of you guys would have would be so much significantly, and so, like, your entire value would go up. Like, you would be, you know, at a minimum, like, Davis Bertans level of shot volume.
Yeah, I'd come in and shoot 12 threes a game.
Yeah, and, like, Jason, you wouldn't have a season where, you know, you took 2 threes a game and took a ton of, like, long twos like you did in Toronto. They would have you, like, I don't know, Malik Beasley takes, like, almost 10 threes a game right now.
I mean, that would be, yeah. I think I saw a stat where someone averages, like, 16 minutes a game and averages close to 10 threes. And, you know, during, like, the peak of my career, I would maybe, I think the most minutes I ever averaged was probably in the mid-20s, and I bet I might average maybe 3.5 threes. So, yeah, it's a different style of game. And, you know, I think the Celtics lead the league now, what, shooting, like, 50-something threes a game. So, it's a different style, but, you know, I would assume at some point it's got to go backwards, you know, and we got to bring back some sort of post play, some sort of skill in the post, in the footwork part of the game, because after a while it gets kind of tired just seeing dudes just jack up threes. And, you know, as a three-point shooter, it's kind of more fun to watch quality threes. There's a lot of guys that shoot threes who probably shouldn't be shooting threes, and if you're shooting in the 30 percentile and, you know, you're shooting from 35 feet, to me the math doesn't seem to work there.
That's the biggest difference. Like, what's considered an open, I'm using air quotes, open three now versus when we played – is night and day. Like, an open three now was like a heat check three when we played. Like, I can't tell you how many times we'd be in film and Coach Pop has the little clicker and we do shot selection edits and he'd like pause it and you got like Kevin Garnett or Marcus Camby closing out full length and the ball's going over and he's like, there's 13, 14 seconds left on the shot clock and this is the shot you're taking. Would you call that contested? Back then, you'd be like, yeah, that looks contested. And then also, if we can get that shot with 14 on the shot clock, we can get it with 4 on the shot clock. Like, we should work it for an even more open shot. That's all out the window now. Like, if you have even any daylight, you let that thing fly, and there's no conscience. There's no, like, I doubt they're doing shot selection edits anymore.
Yeah, and I guess that makes it, you know, even if three-point shooting talent has increased, the percentages don't increase a lot league-wide because guys take tougher and tougher
But they're also shots. More efficient, so it balances out with the offensive efficiency.
Yeah.
Teams are smarter.
Yeah, although then you get the Celtics taking like 65 threes in a loss last night
insane.
Where it's maybe too far.
I mean, that's crazy, right?
Yeah.
How do you shoot 65 threes?
It's and I mean they lost, right? Like they got 112 points. They took 63.
This is why they make me nervous in the playoffs. You go on a couple 2-3 cold streak, you're living and dying by that three. That could bounce you.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Or they make them and they win the championship. It's like one or the other, you know?
Yeah, it's basically it. So, Jason, I wanted to ask you, I'm curious about this. So you had a season where you shot over 50% on threes. I know that at one point you had said you thought 50-50, like 50% overall, 50% from three is like, you know, kind of one of the coolest things you could do. You almost had a 50-50-90 season, even if we throw free throws in there as well. What do you guys think the highest percentage, like someone could actually shoot on threes in a game is? Like, because your season of over 50%, that's only been done a handful of times, and it's only ever been done on like 2 or 3 attempts a game, never on like the volume we see today.
I just think that you won't be able to do that, right? Because all the 3-point shooters shoot so many threes. So, and it's different, you know, like between shooting a catch and shoot spot up three versus like these guys who shoot pull up threes, you know, out of transition, you know, like a couple dribbles, shoot for 35 feet. All the Stephs and the Tatums and them are coming off, you know, like pick and rolls on a hard show and they still shoot three. So I think, I mean, outside of it, you know, like a low volume, strictly spot up shooter, those are the only guys that have a chance to shoot, you know, like, you know, 50 plus. But even the Klay Thompsons, you know, and the high level shooters, those guys shoot such tough threes and they shoot, you know, a lot of those to where if you shoot in the low 40s, I mean, that is the same as shooting, you know, a smaller sample spot up three in the 50s.
Yeah, there's no, if Steph hasn't done it, no one's going to do it.
Right.
Exactly. The quality of shot is completely different. Like the guys I've shot with that I think are probably better shooters than me in shooting workouts, like Jason, when we were coming out and doing the draft workouts, like Brent Berry on the Spurs, like Korver in the draft workouts. Oh, yeah. Like Steve Novak, this is sounding really bad, but like Steve Novak when he was on the Spurs, if those guys couldn't do it back in that era, when like what Jason was saying, they are more catch and shoot open quality threes, then I mean, I don't think anyone's going to do it now.
Yeah, Luke Kennard is the closest. He shot 49.4% a couple years ago on like mostly catch and shoot, but a little bit of pull up and
super impressive
and high volume. I think he took like 6 a game, but that might be like as high as we can go.
Yeah, I don't think, yeah. I just don't see it, right? Because if you're taught now, you know, as soon as you catch it, shoot it. I don't care if you got, you know, like the longest guy closing out on you. I don't care if there's 20 seconds on the shot clock. Like, it's your role now, like, to come to the game and put up shots. It's just like the kid who plays on the Celtics. What is his name? Hauser or whatever?
Yeah, Sam Hauser, yeah.
Yeah, I think he probably averages, what, 15 minutes a game, 14 minutes a game, and he probably gets up at least 6-8 threes a game, 6-7-8.
The best example of that is A.J. Green on the Bucks.
Yeah, he only takes
only
threes.
Shoots threes.
Yeah, Isaiah Joe on the Thunder as well comes in. I think he takes like 10 per 36, but only plays like 15 minutes a game.
I wish I had that job.
Yeah, it's a great role.
okay.
Like, come in the game, dude. Don't take a charge. Don't dive on the floor. Just get up as many threes as possible.
Yeah, and you could swing a game. Like, how many times have we, like an A.J. Green or a Sam Hauser type, against the Raptors this year, been like, okay, well, you're buried in the first quarter because they hit 9 threes against you. It's a quick way to put a game out. Okay, Jason, Matt just mentioned a number of great shooters he shot with in workouts and things like that. We just talked to you about, hey, you were in camp with the Warriors when Steph and Clay were there. You won a couple three-point contests. Who is the best shooter that you've shot with, if it's not you? I mean, you could say it was yourself, if it was
definitely
yourself.
Not me, but yeah. I mean, if you go and you shoot with Clay and Steph for, you know, 30 straight days, you'll see why those dudes are the best. I mean, I've never seen a dude come off a screen, whether it's from 35 feet, you know, 28 feet, like on the wing, top of the key, over half court. But Steph, it's crazy how quick and, like how quick he gets his hip square, and B, how quick he shoots the ball. And so he can come off and he could have his head down, and he'd be coming off like pick and roll going right, and he gets his hips square, and he gets his head up so fast, and he just, I mean, it is in his hand, and he strokes it so quick to where if you have a seven-foot guy who is just a tad bit late, I mean, it's a wide-open shot for him.
Andy, like, adjusts, he adjusts his release and arc based on the defense, too, and still makes it.
And it's quick, too. It's just up, and it's gone.
It's crazy. It's so
yeah. I mean, he's done it for what, 15 years now or so?
Yeah, and still one of the best, one of the coolest things you can do as media in this sport is go early and watch Steph warm up. It's still one of the coolest displays you can see, and it never gets old after 15 years or however many years.
I always, just to reinforce what Jason was saying, like, I always tell people that too, like, oh, and this year you shot better than Steph. I'm like, no. I was shooting catch and shoot spot up threes
more
for 90% of my
too,
shots.
Yeah.
Steph is flying off screens, off the dribble, step backs. It's apples and oranges.
It is, yeah. It is a whole, you know, different shot. And the Klay Thompson is so strong. So Klay's shot is based on his base. His legs and core are so strong. And so he's sprinting out there, right? And so he's like the old school sprint off screens. And it's the same, thing. He's coming off these screens sprinting, you know, on a fade, on a curl, and he gets his hip square, and he is from like the ground up so quick to where it's shot pocket and then go. So, you know, I mean, like in his prime, I think he made what, 14 in one game? I think 14 threes, I think, but it was his highest. So it's just like, I mean, it's catch and shoot off screens too. And so he's got, you know, like the whole cardio aspect of the shot where, you know, like you're running side to side, coming off screens, boom, up.
It's crazy impressive. I don't know how they manage it. Like, the obviously the catch and shoot stuff is really impressive too, to just have that level of precision. But the Clay, like, I'm in the air on a dime when I'm that big, is crazy to me.
Yeah.
On a dime. And he also had to guard the best player on defense too. And he also played 38 minutes a game.
Yeah.
But then hence why you see why they won a few titles, because they had some pretty darn good players.
Yeah, and he was looking good this year until everything around him in Dallas went haywire. So hopefully Clay will get another chance at some point. Jason, before we let you go, you're in a UCLA shirt there. It's tournament time. It's almost March Madness time. I know UCLA had like a bit of a rough start, but it turned around. How you feeling?
I mean, I'm not feeling that great, but it was a decent season. You know, the problem is that California is a long flight to all of these schools that we play. So we got to go from like the West Coast all the way to, you know, Boston. We're in, you know, Pennsylvania. So, you know, the change to the Big Ten has been tough on us. But Coach Cronin is tried and true in the tournament. So I think the grit in the, you know, in the half court game that he plays could probably slow down these teams who try to play fast pace, try to shoot a lot of threes. Cronin's going to try to slow you down and score in the old school. You know, so he's going to try to play you in a half court game. He's going to keep the score down in the 50s. So, you know, if it's a grit out game, then I'm going to take the Bruins.
While we're on the subject of UCLA, your college career, you were 4-time first team all Pac-12, RIP Pac-12, which is insane to me. I mean, I played like 15 minutes a game my freshman year, and you were first team in like one of the premier conferences. And I was doing some research. You guys went to the Sweet 16, I think, your first, second, and third year. And then what happened in that fourth year?
I think we all packed it in. It was a rough year. It started out so bad to where we lost to the exhibition team at the start of my senior year. Matt. So in a team that is like the old school players.
Like Marathon Oil? $25. Marathon Oil? Like one of those teams?
Yeah, yeah. And they came in a Pauley Pavilion, and I think they got us by like 8 points. So that's kind of when I knew like the focus and the construction of our team wasn't really the best. And it never got better because then we started out that year. I think we lost to UC San Diego, which you could probably guess probably didn't have that many talented players. Definitely have guys that went pro, but yeah, like they clipped us at home. So we started like on a downhill slide, so it was kind of hard to recover.
That's a tough one. Had you given any consideration? I know that like in that era, you know, doing 4 years was a little bit more common. Had you given any consideration to coming out after your junior year, given that you guys had so much success?
First team, all conference as a freshman.
I mean, I put my name in the draft after my freshman year, but that was so back then was when you got to put your name in the draft and then you couldn't, you couldn't stay in your dorms. You couldn't eat meals, you know, like on campus because, you know, the NCAA said that was wrong. So I had to move back home and drive up to campus. And then if you couldn't get like a guarantee to go first round, then it's kind of, you know, it kind of didn't make sense. So I couldn't get a guarantee. So I decided to come back and play it on out.
Well, it ended up working out.
You would have made a ton of money in NIL first team.
Yeah, all NIL money now.
Yeah.
I mean, picture Bonner, you know, like in Gainesville.
Oh my God!
Playing for Todd Golden. I mean, he would make like $1.8 million. Living life right there.
Think of how many
top four in the country.
Yeah. Think of how many footlongs I could buy.
I was gonna say because you're always Jason. He is always like coming up with ideas for different like ways we could get free stuff on the show. You would have there are guys who get the $5 million and it's one NIL deal. Matt would have like 50 different like $5,000 NIL deals and just stack them up.
Absolutely.
He would stack them and save them. And then he would go get his teammates to go buy him food.
Yeah. Is that something you did?
Absolutely.
Nice.
Yeah. I knew where all the hookups were.
Nice. All right. Jason,
how much you got on your declining balance?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Great. Jason, we got to let you go, man. Thanks so much for doing this. Really appreciate it. Great to catch up with you.
Yeah, right on.
Thanks, Jason.
Have a good week, boy.
All the best, Jason. Later, thank you.
Later, Blake. Be good.
Yeah. And go Bruins until they run into Florida, right?
Maybe like a 116 matchup.
Yeah. I don't think they'll be as low as 16. There are 7 top 25 ranked teams in the Big Ten because the conference is like 400 teams.
Oh, yeah. Keep
now.
Forgetting they're in that conference.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
Yeah. So they have a better conference record than some of the other Big Ten teams, but they're not ranked as of right now. So they're like the latest bracketology had them as a 6 seed, but we'll obviously see how the Big Ten tournament
6 to 10
plays out. I've always been partial to UCLA. I like UCLA.
I mean, they're like one of the blue blood basketball programs.
Yeah. Norm. Gave us Norm.
Have you ever been there? Been on campus?
I have.
Beautiful.
The Raptors practiced there 1 year when they were like had an off day in LA. That's where they practiced. So I got to go and check everything out, which was really cool.
We did walk through there once on the Spurs and back when Coach Wooden was alive and Coach Wooden came and talked to us and I got an autographed copy of his book, which I still have.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was really
cool. Okay. Time now for Fast Break, brought to you by BetMGM, the sportsbook born in Vegas. We got a doubleheader on Sportsnet 1 tonight. We got Lakers Bucks at 7:30. Then we got Kings at Warriors at 10 p.m. Let's take a look at Kings at Warriors. Warriors are 7.5-point favorites, over-under set at 233.5. On the Kings side, Domantas Sabonis, who has missed a couple games in a row, is questionable. So maybe you get to see him back tonight. Jake LaRavia, also questionable. On the Warriors side, Jonathan Kuminga, probable. Brandon Podziemski is out. This is the Warriors team. It's 37-28. They're tied for sixth in the West with Minnesota, who beat Denver last night. And they are 2-0 against Denver, and they've beat OKC twice. Don't know what's going on with the Wolves. They don't appear to be great overall, but they have the number of the two best teams in the Western Conference. Weird one. Anyway, Golden State fighting with them to avoid the play-in. They're 12-2 in their last 14 and 12-1 when Jimmy and Steph play together. They've been starting Jimmy, Steph, Draymond, and then Quinton Post and Moses Moody has been their starting lineup. So interesting look there from them. Sacramento 33-31. They're ninth in the West. They're probably going to end up in the play-in. They've got a 4-game cushion there. Very streaky team still. 8-7 since they got LaVine, but Sabonis has been out a bunch of games with Jonas Valanciunas starting instead, old friend. Golden State, numbers on the year is not that great, but since the deadline, top 5 in offense and defense. So a team that seems to be clicking pretty good there. Again, it's Lakers Bucks at 7:30, Kings at Warriors at 10. Sports at 1 doubleheader. That was Fast Break, brought to you by BetMGM, the sportsbook born in Vegas. Thanks to Jason Capono for joining us, to Amit Mon, Jake Schultz, and Jennifer Rolnick. Matt, you got to go impact the youth as far as basketball goes.
I am. Let's go teach them how to shoot.
And you've taught me nothing about shooting. Lots about basketball, but my
jump, don't need it.
My jump shot's still terribly
broken. You told
broken.
Me in the media game you were dominating on defense. That's your role.
Yeah, zero and D. Have a good day, everyone. We'll be back tomorrow.